A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's got an older car without tire pressure monitoring. He's loading up for a trip, and he's been eyeing these palm-sized wireless inflators that claim to replace a garage compressor. He's skeptical, and honestly, so was I. The core questions: how do these things actually perform against a real garage setup? How reliable are their pressure readings? What do you pay for a decent one? And how many inflations per charge?
The timing on this is perfect, because Consumer Reports just dropped their 2026 test of 14 wireless inflators, and the results are genuinely alarming in places. Three models had pressure errors exceeding plus or minus 2 psi. One baseless unit, the CRJ-ZY601, was off by 3.2 psi.
3.2 psi low. Meaning if you set it to 35, your tires are actually at 38.2.
And Amazon currently lists over 200 wireless inflators under $60. The category is exploding, but accuracy is a minefield. This isn't a theoretical problem. People are driving on pressures they think they set correctly.
We're stress testing the whole category today. What's inside these things? Why some are good and some are dangerous? And where Daniel should actually put his money?
I should say, I've been digging through the teardowns and the test data, and the gap between the best and the worst is wider than I expected. We're talking about sensor technology choices that fundamentally determine whether you're safe or not.
Before we get into the guts of it, though, let's frame what we're actually comparing. On one side, a garage compressor, big tank, mains power, inflates a tire in about 12 seconds, unlimited air, gauge that's hopefully calibrated. On the other side, something that fits in your glove box and runs on a battery. The question isn't whether the handheld can beat the garage compressor. It can't. Physics says no. The question is whether it's good enough to trust your safety to.
That's exactly the right framing, because good enough has a specific number attached to it. The industry standard for a reliable tire gauge is plus or minus 1 psi. Below that, you're introducing meaningful error. Above that, and especially above 2 psi, you're in territory where the tool is actively misleading you.
Daniel mentioned Baseus specifically. And look, I've used Baseus chargers. I stress tested one of their Gayen bricks a while back, and it handled the load fine. But chargers and pressure sensors are completely different engineering problems.
And Baseus is a perfect example of the brand inconsistency problem in this space. They make some solid electronics. But their CRJ-ZY601 inflator? 3.2 psi error at 35 psi. That's not a rounding error. That's a design failure.
The brand name on the casing tells you almost nothing. You have to look at the specific model and what sensor it's using.
And that's where most buyers get tripped up. They see a familiar brand, decent Amazon reviews, $40, seems fine. But the reviews aren't testing against a calibrated reference gauge. They're just seeing if air comes out and the tire looks fuller.
The gas station air pump problem, but now it's in your trunk. I've described gas station gauges as the gym bathroom scale of automotive equipment. Directionally useful, not trustworthy. But at least with a gas station pump, you know you're gambling. With a handheld inflator that has a digital readout to one decimal place, there's an illusion of precision.
That illusion is what makes the bad ones more dangerous than no inflator at all. If you have no gauge, you know you're guessing, and you go find a proper one. If you have a gauge that's confidently wrong by 3 psi, you set it and forget it, and you're driving around overinflated for months.
Before we dig into the mechanism and the test data, let's put a stake in the ground. What should Daniel actually expect to pay for something trustworthy?
The sweet spot right now is around $70. The Fantic X8 Apex, which is the top pick from both Wirecutter's 2025 update and Consumer Reports' 2026 roundup, comes in at $69.99. It achieves plus or minus 0.5 psi accuracy against a calibrated reference gauge across 10 repeated tests.
The Baseus that failed so badly?
$29.99. So the price gap between dangerous and reliable is about $40. That's roughly the cost of one tire if you wear it out prematurely from chronic overinflation.
There's your cost-benefit analysis in one sentence.
That's before we even talk about safety. Overinflated tires reduce your contact patch, which means less traction, longer braking distances, and uneven tread wear down the center, and highway speeds with a loaded vehicle, that's not a minor trade-off.
Daniel's skepticism is well placed, but the answer isn't don't buy one. The answer is buy the right one, and the right one is a known quantity.
And let's be clear about what these devices are and aren't. They're topping off tools. They're not designed to inflate a tire from flat. The motor would overheat, the battery would drain, and it'd take forever. But for the use case Daniel described, checking and adjusting pressure before loading up for a trip, they're actually ideal. No hose across the driveway, no quarters for the gas station machine, no driving to the garage just for air.
The convenience factor changes behavior too. Consumer Reports found that drivers who own portable inflators check their tire pressure 3 times more frequently than those who don't, monthly versus quarterly. Even if the inflator is slightly less accurate than a professional gauge, the net safety effect is positive because the alternative for most people is simply not checking.
That's the knock-on effect that doesn't show up in spec sheets. The best tire gauge in the world does nothing if it's sitting in your garage while you're on the highway with low pressure. A good enough gauge that's always in your car gets used.
Which brings us to the mechanism question. Daniel asked how something palm-sized can inflate a car tire at all. What's actually inside these things?
The core is a brushless DC motor driving a small reciprocating piston compressor powered by a lithium-ion pack, typically 2,000 to 5,000 milliamp hours. The pressure sensor is a MEMS-based digital gauge, microelectromechanical systems, same fundamental technology as the TPMS sensors in newer cars.
MEMs, tiny silicon structures that deform under pressure and convert that deformation into an electrical signal.
And here's where the quality split happens. A good MEMS sensor with proper temperature compensation and factory calibration can be extremely accurate, plus or minus 0.5 PSI, like the Fontic. A cheap piezo-resistive sensor without temperature compensation will drift. It'll read differently at 40 degrees Fahrenheit versus 90 degrees Fahrenheit. And if the factory calibration is sloppy, you get the 3+ PSI errors we're seeing in the Basius and similar budget models.
The sensor itself isn't necessarily the expensive part. It's the calibration and compensation circuitry around it.
The raw MEMS die costs pennies. The difference is whether the manufacturer invests in temperature characterization, individual unit calibration, and quality control. Fontic and Xiaomi do. A lot of the no-name Amazon brands don't.
That's invisible to the buyer. You can't tell from the product photos whether the sensor was calibrated at 3 temperature points or 0.
Which is why independent testing matters so much. Wirecutter and Consumer Reports are doing the work of verifying accuracy against a calibrated reference gauge. Without that, you're flying blind.
Okay, so the sensor story is, MEMS technology can be accurate, but only if the manufacturer pays for calibration and temperature compensation. Cheap models skip that step, and you get drift and offset errors. What about the motor and battery side?
The motor is a brushless DC unit, efficient, compact, and quiet relative to the brushed motors in older 12-volt cigarette lighter pumps. The limiting factor is heat. These things get hot. The Fantic X8 Apex has a built-in cooling fan, and even then, the duty cycle is limited. Most manufacturers recommend letting the unit cool for 10 minutes after inflating 2 tires.
4 tires in a row is pushing it.
It's doable, but you're at the thermal limit. The Fantic managed 4 full inflations plus 2 top-offs on a single charge in Wirecutter's testing, but that's from 28 to 35 PSI, a 7 PSI top-off per tire. If you're doing larger corrections, you'll get fewer tires per charge.
What about the battery itself? Daniel asked about charge longevity, both per charge and over the life of the device.
Most of these use 18650 lithium-ion cells. The Fontic X8 Apex specifically uses Samsung 35E cells, which are a known high-quality part with a rated cycle life of about 500 cycles to 80% capacity. Cheaper models often use unbranded cells or pouch cells that degrade faster.
After a couple years of regular use, the Fantique might still do 3 tires per charge instead of 4. The Basias might drop from 3 to 2.
That's if the battery management is decent. Some of the ultra-budget models don't have proper low-voltage cutoff or temperature monitoring, which accelerates degradation. Store one of those in a hot trunk all summer, and you might find it dead when you need it.
Which is a maintenance tip we'll get to later. But the short version is, keep it in the cabin, not the trunk, and top up the charge every few months.
Lithium-ion cells degrade fastest when stored at low charge states or at high temperatures. A glove box in summer can hit 140 degrees Fahrenheit. That's brutal on batteries.
We've got the mechanism. Picture, brushless motor, piston compressor, MEMS sensor, lithium-ion back. The good ones use quality cells and calibrated sensors. The bad ones skip calibration and use whatever cells are cheapest that week. And the performance difference is measurable. 3.2 PSI error versus 0.5.
That error translates directly to your contact patch. 3 PSI over means the center of your tread is doing more work than the shoulders. On a loaded vehicle, that's exactly where you don't want the stress concentrated.
Let's put a finer point on that. Daniel's use case is loading up the car, which means he should be adding pressure to the rear tires per the load inflation table. If his inflator reads 3 PSI low, and he's targeting, say, 38 PSI for a loaded rear axle, he's actually at 41. That's getting close to the maximum pressure molded on the sidewall, typically 44 PSI for a standard passenger tire.
Maximum sidewall pressure isn't a target, it's a do not exceed. Operating near it while loaded and at highway speeds reduces your margin for heat buildup. Tires gain pressure as they heat up, typically 2 to 4 PSI after 20 minutes of highway driving. So if you start at 41 cold, you could be at 43 or 44 hot. That's right at the limit.
All because a $30 inflator lied to you by 3 PSI.
You'd never know. The tire wouldn't look overinflated to the naked eye. You'd just have reduced traction and accelerated center wear, and maybe, in a worst-case scenario, a blowout on a hot day with a heavy load.
The cheap inflator isn't just not as good. In this specific failure mode, it's actively worse than using a $5 pencil gauge and a bicycle bump. At least the pencil gauge, crude as it is probably within 1.5 PSI if it's not damaged.
That's the irony. A mechanical pencil gauge, just a spring and a calibrated tube, is harder to get catastrophically wrong than a cheap digital sensor with no temperature compensation. The digital readout gives you false confidence.
The illusion of precision strikes again.
Now, to be fair to the category as a whole, the good models have solved this. The Fantique X8 Apex at plus or minus 0.5 PSI is as accurate as a quality handheld digital gauge. The Xiaomi Mi Portable 2 is in the same ballpark. DeWalt's cordless inflator, which is a slightly different form factor, is also solid. The technology exists to do this right.
The category isn't the problem. The problem is a market flooded with cheap imitations that look like the real thing and have Amazon review scores that don't reflect the accuracy failures.
That's the marketplace failure. Amazon reviews measure whether the product arrived on time and turned on when you pressed the button. They don't measure whether it reads 3 PSI low at 35 PSI. For that, you need a calibrated reference gauge, a controlled test protocol, and multiple repetitions, exactly what Consumer Reports and Wirecutter do.
Daniel's question about reliability of readings has a clear answer. It depends entirely on which model you buy. The best are within half a PSI. The worst are off by enough to matter for safety. And you can't tell which is which from the product listing.
Which is why we're going to get specific with model recommendations. But the principle is, don't buy blind. Buy something that's been independently tested.
One more thing on the sensor front. You mentioned temperature compensation. What actually happens when a sensor lacks it?
Piezo-resistive sensors change their output with temperature because the silicon's resistivity is temperature-dependent. Without compensation, a sensor calibrated at 70 degrees Fahrenheit might read 1 to 2 PSI high at 40 degrees and 1 to 2 PSI low at 100 degrees. So your 35 PSI setting means something different in January versus July.
These things live in cars, which see temperature swings of 60 degrees or more.
A good sensor has an onboard temperature sensor and a lookup table that corrects the pressure reading based on temperature. It's not complicated engineering, it's a few cents of additional silicon and some calibration time. but it's one of the first things cut to hit a $30 price point.
When we talk about what you're paying for with the $70 model versus the $30 model, a chunk of it is literally that, a temperature sensor and the labor to calibrate it.
The battery cells, and the motor quality, and the cooling design. The cost difference isn't markup, it's components.
Alright, let's get into the actual performance numbers. Inflation speed, battery life, how many tires per charge, and start comparing specific models head-to-head.
Wirecutter's 2025 test used a 225/60 R17 tire, a common sedan size, and inflated from 28 to 35 PSI. The Fantiq XA Apex did it in 1 minute 47 seconds, 2 minutes 34 seconds, so you're waiting nearly an extra minute per tire. Multiply by 4 and you're standing in a parking lot for 10 minutes versus about 7. Not a deal breaker, but it reflects the motor and battery efficiency gap.
The per charge endurance.
Fantiq managed 4 full inflations plus 2 top-offs before the battery gave out. The Basius CRJ-ZY601 did 3 full inflations and that was it. Same test conditions, same 7, PSI top-off per tire.
The Fantiq gives you roughly 50% more watt per charge. That tracks with the cell quality difference. Samsung 35E cells versus whatever generic cells Basius is sourcing that quarter.
That gap widens over time. After 100 charge cycles, lithium-ion cells typically lose about 15% of their original capacity, so a Fantiq that started at 4 plus inflations might drop to 3.5. A Basius that started at 3 drops to maybe 2.5. 2 years in, you might not have enough juice to do all 4 tires in one session.
Which is exactly when you need it. 2 years into ownership, heading out on a trip, and the thing dies on the third tire.
The battery management matters here too. The Fantiq has proper low voltage cutoff and temperature monitoring on the charge circuit. Some of the ultra budget models don't. They'll let the cells drop below safe minimum voltage during storage, which permanently damages capacity. Store one of those in a hot trunk for 6 months and it might be a brick when you pull it out.
The per charge number on the box is already optimistic, and the real number 2 years later is lower. And how much lower depends on whether the manufacturer spent money on battery management or not.
There's also a subtler point about the discharge curve. Quality cells like the Samsung 35E maintain a flatter voltage under load. Cheap cells sag more as they deplete, which means the motor runs slower and the inflation time gets longer as the battery drains. Your fourth tire takes noticeably longer than your first.
It's not just how many tires, it's that the experience degrades as you work through them.
That's before we even talk about the Xiaomi Mi Portable 2, which uses pouch cells instead of cylindrical 18650s. Pouch cells are thinner and lighter, which is why Xiaomi can make a more compact device. But they degrade faster under thermal stress. The electrolyte distribution gets uneven, you get swelling, capacity drops more steeply after the first 100 cycles.
Xiaomi traded long-term durability for form factor.
They did, and for some users that's a reasonable trade-off. If you're only using it a few times a year and you store it in a climate-controlled cabin, the pouch cell might last 5 years without noticeable degradation. But if you're the type who checks tires monthly and leaves it in the trunk, the cylindrical cells in the Fantiq will outlast it.
Which circles back to the accuracy question, because a device that's degrading in battery performance is at least obvious, it runs slower or dies sooner. A device with a bad sensor degrades silently. You don't know it's lying to you until you cross-check it.
That 3.2 PSI error on the Basius isn't a one-off defective unit. Consumer Reports tested multiple samples and found consistent offset. That's a design-level problem. The sensor and its calibration are systematically wrong, not randomly wrong.
It's not. You might get a bad one. It's this model is bad.
And that's why I keep coming back to the independent testing. The Fantiq, plus or minus 0.5 PSI, is essentially matching a calibrated lab-grade reference gauge. The Basius, at minus 3.2 PSI, is worse than the battered pencil gauge hanging on a nail in someone's garage.
The range within a single product category is wild. 0.5 to 3.2 PSI. That's a 6 to 1 error ratio between the best and the worst for products that look nearly identical on Amazon.
Both have 4.5 star reviews.
There's the marketplace failure in one sentence.
Let's put numbers on the safety risk, because I think people hear 3 PSI and shrug. 3 PSI doesn't sound like much.
It sounds like the difference between a firm handshake and a slightly firmer handshake.
But on a loaded vehicle, it changes your contact patch geometry. Overinflate by 3 PSI and the tread center bulges outward. You're riding on a narrower strip of rubber. Less rubber on the road means longer braking distances, especially in wet conditions, and the center tread wears faster, so you're replacing tires sooner.
Daniel's loading up the car, which means he's already adding pressure to the rears, per the load inflation table. If his target is 38 PSI cold, and the inflator is reading 3 low, he's actually at 41. 20 minutes of highway driving adds another 2 to 4 PSI from heat. Now he's at 43 to 45.
On a tire whose sidewall max is 44. That's not a theoretical edge case. That's a plausible real-world scenario from a single bad purchase.
The cheap inflator isn't just less accurate. In this scenario, it's actively pushing you toward the failure limits of the tire.
You'd never know. The tire doesn't look different at 43 versus 38. The steering feel might be slightly harsher, but most drivers wouldn't register it. You just have reduced traction and accelerated wear, and if it's a hot day with a heavy load, a blowout is on the table.
Which makes the cost question sharper. The Basius is $30, the Fantic is $70. That $40 difference is less than the cost of one tire. Never mind the cost of a highway blowout.
If you want to go even cheaper and still be safe, there's the manual route. An AccuGauge 0 to 60 PSI digital gauge is about $25. Add a $10 foot pump and you're at $35 total. That setup is accurate to within about 1 PSI, never runs out of battery, and works in any temperature. The trade-off is physical effort. Pumping a tire from 28 to 35 with a foot pump is tiring.
The wireless inflator's value proposition is basically, you're paying an extra $35 to $40 to not do squats in a parking lot.
That's the most honest framing I've heard. And for most people, that's money well spent, because the convenience means they'll actually check their pressures. Consumer Reports 2026 survey found drivers with portable inflators check 3 times more often than those without, monthly versus quarterly.
3 times more frequent checks. Even with a slightly imperfect gauge, that's a net safety gain, because the alternative isn't perfectly calibrated checks. The alternative is checking once a season at a gas station with a gauge that's been dropped on concrete 40 times.
That's the behavioral knock-on effect that spec sheets can't capture. The best tool is the one you actually use. A $70 inflator in your trunk gets used monthly. A $5 pencil gauge in your garage drawer gets used quarterly, if you remember.
For Daniel, the question isn't really, should I buy one? It's, which one should I buy, and what should I look for to avoid the dangerous ones?
1. Accuracy spec of plus or minus 1 PSI or better with explicit temperature compensation. If the listing doesn't mention temperature compensation, assume it doesn't have it. 2. Battery capacity of at least 4,000 milliamp hours. That's the threshold for 4 full top-offs. 3. USB-C charging with power delivery support. 4. Hose length of at least 20 inches. Shorter hoses make it hard to reach the valve on awkward wheel positions. 5. Auto shutoff at preset pressure. 6. Brand track record. Fantic, Xiaomi, and DeWalt have consistent independent test results. Basius is model dependent. Some of their electronics are fine, but their inflators are hit or miss.
If you're standing in front of a shelf or scrolling Amazon and you can't verify all 6,
then buy the Fantic X8 Apex and be done with it. $69.99, independently verified by 2 major test organizations, uses Samsung cells, accurate to within half a PSI. It's the default answer until someone else ships something better at the same price.
There's something almost reassuring about a product category where the answer is that specific. No, it depends on your needs. Just buy this one.
Sometimes the research converges. And when it does, pretending there's ambiguity is its own kind of dishonesty.
If Daniel walks away with one thing, it's that the Fantic X8 Apex is the safe default, but I want to give him a few usage habits that make even a good inflator better.
First thing, the day you unbox it, test it against a known reference. Drive to a tire shop. Ask them to set one tire to 35 PSI with their calibrated shop gauge. Most will do this for free or a couple bucks. Then immediately check that tire with your new inflator. If it reads 35.0, you're golden. If it reads 34.5, you know your unit reads half a PSI low and you can mentally compensate.
Or just set the target half a PSI higher. The auto shutoff lets you dial in a specific number. If your unit reads low by 1 PSI, set it to 36 when you want 35.
It's a one-time calibration check that takes 10 minutes and removes the lingering uncertainty. And for Daniel specifically, since he's loading up the car, there's a second number to know. The load inflation table, on the driver's door jamb or in the owner's manual, will tell you to add pressure to the rear tires when carrying weight. Typically, it's 3 to 4 PSI above the normal cold pressure.
That's not a suggestion. That's the manufacturer telling you what pressure maintains the correct contact patch when the rear axle is heavier. Skip it, and you're underinflated for the load, even if you're at the normal number.
So Daniel's sequence should be, check the door jamb for the loaded pressure spec, set the inflator to that number plus whatever small offset his calibration check revealed, and inflate cold before he loads the car.
Cold meaning the tires haven't been driven on for at least 3 hours. Morning of the trip, before you leave.
That's the ideal. If you have to do it warm, add about 2 PSI to the cold spec. It'll settle back down as they cool. But cold is better.
Now the maintenance side. What's the actual routine someone should follow?
Recharge the inflator every 3 months, even if you haven't used it. Lithium ion cells self-discharge slowly, and if they drop below about 20% and sit there for months, permanent capacity loss kicks in. A quarterly top-up to around 60 to 80% is ideal for storage longevity.
Not 100%, just enough to keep it out of the danger zone.
Fully charged is fine too, but if you're optimizing for cell lifespan over years, the sweet spot is 60 to 80%, and the bigger point, stored in the cabin, not the trunk. A trunk in summer can hit 140 degrees Fahrenheit. That's battery murder. The glove box or under a seat is dramatically cooler.
The trunk seems like the natural place. It's where the spare tire lives. It's where you keep car stuff. But it's also an unventilated metal box in direct sunlight.
Winter is almost as bad at the other extreme. Lithium ion cells don't like being charged when they're below freezing. If your inflator has been sitting in the car at 20 degrees Fahrenheit overnight, bring it inside and let it warm up for half an hour before you use it or charge it. Most of the good models have low temperature protection on the charge circuit, the Fantic does, but it's still better to just warm it up.
The quarterly routine is, pull it out of the glove box, check the charge level, top it up to around 70%, put it back, 3 minutes, 4 times a year.
While you're at it, check the hose for cracks and make sure the chuck still threads smoothly onto a valve stem. The mechanical bits need almost no maintenance, but the rubber hose can degrade over years of temperature cycling.
The bottom line on all of this, and I think this is what Daniel was really driving at, is whether these things are a genuine safety upgrade or just another gadget. And I think the answer is, they're a genuine safety upgrade if you buy the right one and use it regularly.
That's where I land too. The Consumer Reports data on behavior change is hard to argue with. Drivers check pressure 3 times more often when they own a portable inflator. That alone probably outweighs the half PSI error of a good unit versus a professional gauge. Because the alternative for most people isn't monthly checks with a calibrated shop gauge. It's quarterly checks with whatever gauge is on the gas station hose.
Or no checks at all until the tire looks low, at which point it's been underinflated for weeks.
So the net safety equation is strongly positive for a good inflator. For a bad one, the 3.2 PSI error category, the equation flips. You're checking more often but setting the wrong pressure every time, confidently. That's worse than checking rarely but using a decent gauge when you do.
Which makes the purchase decision unusually binary. There's not a spectrum of get what you pay for where the $40 option is decent and the $70 option is great. It's more like, below about $60 you're gambling. Above $60, from a tested brand, you're getting a tool you can trust.
$60 to $70 is roughly 2 to 3 garage visits for pressure checks. If you own the car for 5 years and check monthly during driving season, the inflator pays for itself in the first year just in avoided garage trips. The safety benefit is free after that.
Daniel, if you're listening, buy the Fantic X8 Apex, test it once against a shop gauge, add 3 to 4 PSI to the rears when you're loaded per the door jamb table, recharge it every 3 months, and keep it in the cabin, not the trunk. That's the whole playbook.
If $69.99 feels steep, the Xiaomi Mi Portable 2 is the next best option. Similar accuracy, slightly smaller battery, pouch cells that won't last quite as long in a car environment, but still a tested and reliable device. Below that price point, I wouldn't go.
The $40 you save on a Basius buys you a meaningful safety risk and a device that'll degrade faster. That's not savings, that's deferred cost.
We've got the playbook for today. But I want to zoom out for a second because there's a bigger trajectory here worth watching. The Fantiq already matches a calibrated gauge within half a PSI. The accuracy problem is solved, at least at the $70 price point. The open question is speed.
Because accuracy was a sensor and calibration problem. Speed is a physics problem. You're limited by how much air a tiny piston can move per stroke, and how much heat the motor can shed.
A 6-gallon garage compressor moves a huge volume of air per cycle. A handheld piston the size of a thumb is fundamentally capped. Better batteries won't change the bore diameter or the stroke length. So I don't think we'll ever see a palm-sized inflator match a garage compressor's 12-second inflation. The physics just doesn't scale down that way.
The accuracy is already there. And for a topping-off tool, 2 minutes per tire is fine. The real question is, what happens when you add connectivity?
That's where it gets interesting. Some 2026 models already have Bluetooth. They pair with a smartphone app that logs pressure history per tire, tracks temperature, and suggests adjustments based on load. Right now it's a niche feature, but the data pipeline is the valuable part.
Because once you've got a device that knows your pressure history and your typical load pattern, it can start making predictions. Your rear left loses about 1 PSI per month. Top it off before your trip Friday, or you're loading to near max capacity. Bump the rears to 41 per the manufacturer table.
That's not speculative. The load inflation table is already in the owner's manual. It's just that nobody looks at it. An app that pulls your vehicle's specs and your actual measured pressures and says, add 3 PSI to the rears for this trip. That turns a manual lookup into a push notification.
The inflator becomes the sensor node, and the phone becomes the brain. The hardware is already capable. It's just a software integration problem at this point.
That integration could feed into predictive maintenance more broadly. Irregular pressure loss patterns can indicate a slow puncture, a bead leak, or a valve stem issue before they become visible. Fleet operators already do this with TPMS telematics. Bringing it to consumer handhelds is a logical next step.
The $70 gadget in Daniel's glove box today is probably the dumb ancestor of something that, 5 years from now, tells you about a nail in your tire before you've even noticed the pressure drop.
Which makes buying into the category now a reasonable bet. The core hardware, brushless motor, MEMS sensor, lithium pack, is mature. The software layer is what'll evolve, and that'll come via app updates, not a new device.
All right, I think we've earned our fun fact. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The Inuttitut word, Kaujimajatu Kangit, meaning traditional knowledge or that which has long been known, is an example of polysynthetic morphology where a single word encodes what would be a full sentence in English. The root, Kauji, means to know, and the suffixes build out tense, aspect, and epistemological stance, essentially encoding not just what is known, but how it came to be known and with what degree of certainty.
The word itself carries an epistemology.
I feel like we just got linguistically outflanked.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you found this useful, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. We're back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.